looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
I was gonna go to class before I got high.
Come on, y'all.
Check it out.
I could have cheated and I could have passed, but I got high. I'm taking it next semester, and I know why.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Well, I think in my Twitter feed, probably 10 times a day, and I do not exaggerate, there is some story related to the legalization of marijuana. Last night, it was a story linked to an op-ed piece in a major newspaper talking about what a disaster the state of Colorado's experiment in legalizing marijuana, recreational marijuana, has turned out to be. It didn't lower crime, it didn't bring in the revenue, and things are actually not that great. After what we were told, it would both lower crime because the police would be freed up to go after real criminals and that it would bring in revenue that would pay for all sorts of things. What about the medicinal claims for marijuana when it's legalized only for that purpose? Joining us to talk about arguments against legalizing marijuana, Alex Berenson. He's a former New York Times reporter and author of the new book, Tell Your Children, The Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. Alex, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Todd, thanks for having me.
Near the end of your book, you talk about the following syllogism of sorts. Marijuana causes psychosis. Psychosis causes violence. The obvious implication being that marijuana causes violence. But you say that the marijuana-psychosis-violence connection is even stronger than that. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that, so the studies that show that psychosis leads to violent crime and especially to homicide, there's very good data on that. And the best number is that people with schizophrenia, which is sort of the most severe form of psychotic disorder, are at about 20 times the risk for committing homicide as healthy people. But the fact is, and before we stigmatize everybody, we shouldn't, if you're taking your antipsychotic medicine and you're not using recreational drugs, even with one of those illnesses, you're not much more likely to commit violence than a healthy person. The problem is that a lot of people who have these mental illnesses don't like taking their medicine, and they do like self-medicating with recreational drugs. And once they do that, they become at very, very high risk for violence. And, you know, the best studies show that somewhere between 5 to 10%, maybe 6 to 9% of all the murders in the United States, and really worldwide in the places that have looked at this, are committed by people with schizophrenia, and most of the time those people are using some kind of drug. They're using either cannabis or methamphetamine, usually cannabis or a stimulant, and cannabis is the most likely drug.
So let's talk about Colorado. It is probably the biggest experiment in the United States to date in the legalization of marijuana. How has it turned out?
Well, in Colorado, one of the problems is we don't have great data from any of these states. But what I can tell you is that in Colorado in 2006, there were about 40 suicides where THC was found. THC is the active ingredient in marijuana, the psychoactive ingredient, where THC was found in the blood of the person who committed suicide. By 2016, post-legalization, that had risen to almost 200. And if you look at violent crime in Colorado, so again, Colorado legalized recreational marijuana at the beginning of 2014. So if you look at 2013 compared to 2017, homicides and aggravated assaults, violent crime, are way up. And so aggravated assaults are up almost 30% in the state, and homicides are up a similar amount. And so it's impossible right now to say, okay, cannabis legalization definitely caused that. But one of the things that people said before legalization began was, we're going to see drops in violent crime. This is going to be great. We're going to see the police able to focus on violent criminals, and we're going to set the black market ends. And neither of those things seems to be true. Right now, crime is rising in Colorado and Washington and Oregon and Alaska, and we don't really know why. And I think it's a very, very good question we need to ask.
So let's go through some of the attending issues. What did you discover about the medical use of marijuana? Because often, legislatively, it begins with the legalization of medicinal marijuana.
Yes. So, unfortunately, marijuana isn't very good for most of the medicinal purposes that it's claimed to be good for. If you actually look at the data, people sometimes say, oh, it could treat ALS, it can treat cancer, it can treat really serious diseases. Most of that is there's just zero evidence. And even in the conditions where there's some evidence, it's usually quite weak. The problem is once it's medicinally legalized for pain, almost anybody then can go to a doctor, or not even really a doctor, because most doctors won't write this, but there's a small number of doctors who like to write what are called authorizations for marijuana use. And if you go to one of those doctors and say, I have pain, you're very likely to get an authorization. And then you can buy all the cannabis you want for the next year. So ultimately, medical marijuana legalization is really a backdoor for recreational use. And then what happens is people say, well, we basically have recreational use anyway through this, you know, loose medical law, so let's go legalize. And that's proven to be a very persuasive argument. And, you know, the reason I wrote Tell Your Children is not really to get into politics around marijuana. It truly isn't. It's because I wanted parents to be able to talk to their kids about this. I wanted people who might be having problems with their marijuana use to have this book, which could maybe help put some of those problems in context. I really do believe this is a book about health and science and medicine, and it's not a book about the politics of legalization.
So give us an example of how that it illustrates the connection between marijuana and mental illness and violence.
Sure. So you know, what you might call the index case, a classic case. It happened in 2014, shortly after recreational legalization was passed in Colorado. A man named Richard Kirk, who had no history of violence, had three kids, was married, was employed, and by the way, did have a mild problem with opiates. So it's not like his life was perfect, but he, you know, he was a committed family guy, and he bought an edible. And by the way, this is a very classic case in that he has a family history of schizophrenia. He's a brother with schizophrenia. So even though he doesn't have severe mental illness, there's evidence that, you know, that people in his family are vulnerable to mental illness. So he went out literally to buy milk. I'm not exaggerating. He went out to buy milk for his family for dinner. His back was hurting. He was in some sort of mild opiate withdrawal. He decided, you know what? I'm going to stop and get an edible, even though I don't use marijuana very often. And he came home. He became psychotic, and he shot his wife in the head. He shot his wife in the head while she was on the phone with 911. And he is now serving 30 years in prison in Colorado. And look, there are people who don't like Richard Kirk. Richard Kirk's in-laws certainly don't like him. But nobody who knows him thinks he would have done this if not for the cannabis. And so that's a really classic case. And it's just one case. But in the book, in Tell Your Children, I have tons of cases.
What about the claims, and this is kind of getting to what you're establishing there in bringing forward all those cases, that, and this is usually how it's argued, crime will be lowered by in two ways by legalizing recreational marijuana. One, it will no longer be illegal to possess it. Therefore, the police will not have to worry about those particular laws, but it'll also free up their time to worry about more serious crimes. How is that proven or been disproven?
It just doesn't seem to be working out that way. Unfortunately, in Colorado, there's a very robust black market for marijuana, believe it or not, even though it's legal. And one of the reasons is that, you know, some people are growing it to sell it out of state in states where it remains illegal. But even in state, there's a large black market. The reason for that is most states, including Colorado, have what's called a home grow provision in their legalization, meaning I can literally grow marijuana myself. And in Colorado, I believe every residence can have up to 12 plants. Well, first of all, that's a pretty tough number for the police to enforce. It's pretty tough to know whether somebody has 12 plants or 20 plants. But beyond that, even 12 plants, if once you know how to grow, they're going to produce much more marijuana than you can personally consume in a year. And guess what? You've got to sell that somewhere if you want to get money for it. And it can't enter the legalized system because it's not being grown in a state-regulated facility. So it turns out there is a black market in illegal marijuana, even in states that have legalized. So you sort of have the worst of all worlds. You've got this community of people out there that's promoting use of the drug, and you still have a black market.
We are often told also that marijuana is, apart from its connection to psychosis and violence, not bad for the user, either the person who consumes it edibly or the person who smokes it. What do we know there now?
Well, there's plenty of evidence that becoming a habitual marijuana user, just like becoming a habitual user of any other, you know, recreational drug, is not great for you. Right? I mean, I don't think people would argue that getting up in the morning and hitting your fifth of vodka is good for you. Right? Recreational drugs cause problems for people. They cause addiction and they cause problems for people. And marijuana is no different. Marijuana is a recreational drug. And one of the words that keeps coming up when I talk to psychiatrists about this is insidious. And what the psychiatrists mean is that, so if you drink a lot, if you're getting yourself drunk every night, forget whether you're drinking in the morning, you're going to wake up and your body's going to say to you, I don't like this. And you have to be pretty committed to drinking heavily before, you know, to tolerate all those hangovers. Marijuana is not as physically damaging as alcohol. And so people can use a lot of it and tell themselves, you know what, this is fine. I like being high all day. It's kind of cool. I'm enjoying myself. And they're not really realizing that maybe their, you know, their studies are suffering, their work is suffering, their personal life is suffering. And that the definition of addiction has less to do with physical withdrawal than the drug causing problems for you with other people or at your work. And those are the problems that cannabis causes.
Alex Berenson is our guest, former New York Times reporter and author of the new book, Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. We're talking about arguments against legalizing marijuana. When we come back, there is other associated violence, not necessarily having to do with the psychosis that can often occur. We'll talk about that. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
In a land called Honolulu, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
So let's get to the point. Let's roll another joint. Let's hit.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, January the 17th, we are hearing some arguments against legalizing marijuana from the author of the book, Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence, Alex Berenson, a former New York Times reporter. Alex, let's talk a little bit about some other associated violence. It's not from the drug itself, but the circumstances under which it's procured and things like that. What can you tell us?
So there is a tremendous amount of violence around small-time cannabis dealing, and that's sort of surprising because, again, this is a drug that's supposed to make people mellow, you know, these are usually relatively small sums of money. You would think that opiates, which are known to cause, you know, horrible withdrawal, or cocaine and methamphetamine, which, you know, which are stimulants that are known to cause psychosis and violence in some cases, that there'd be more violence around those. And yet, for some reason, there seems to be a massive amount of violence around marijuana dealing, so much so that police in everywhere from Springfield, Missouri, to Atlanta, to Philadelphia, to Las Vegas, have highlighted this. And again, I think you do have to ask yourself, if you're a fan of this drug, believe that it can't possibly be connected to violence, that why is it that there is so much violence around it?
In that vein, how do you respond to someone who says, look, I've smoked weed my entire life, I stay home in the evenings and I watch, well, it used to be Letterman, let's say I watch Conan while enjoying a little bit of marijuana, and I go to bed and I wake up and I go to work, and that's the extent of my use. It's purely recreational. I don't get out and drive. Sure. My source for this is a very safe fellow businessman, something sure. like that. How do you respond?
I say, great. You know what? That's good for you. Look, plenty of people use alcohol in that way too, right? They have a drink at home, at dinner, you know, maybe they have a drink on a special occasion. They don't have any problems with alcohol, right? But we know, anybody who's ever been to a bar at 9 p.m. and then again at 3 a.m. knows that alcohol disinhibits people and causes violence. And we know it causes drunk driving. We know it causes domestic violence. We know it's a problem, even though most people who use it don't have a problem with it. And I don't quite understand why marijuana users have such a hard time getting their heads around the idea that marijuana might be the same, that it might be a drug that, you know, many people can use casually, but that some people are going to get addicted to and have problems with, and some people are going to get addicted to and possibly not just get intoxicated, but get psychotic and then violent on.
So why do you think there has been, not only in the United States, but internationally, a move to legalize marijuana?
I think there's been a very powerful advocacy campaign by nonprofit drug advocacy groups, and now by for-profit companies. So there are people who have a stake in this who want to legalize, and they're basically, I don't want to say lying, but they are very much misrepresenting both the risks and the benefits of this drug. And the second half of that is that journalists, the people who should be pushing back on them, are not. And I should not be the only one out here who's read the studies and knows what they say. It's bizarre that I'm in this position, honestly. I don't want to be an advocate. I want to be a journalist.
Why are journalists often gung-ho for this, or why aren't they doing their jobs and actually digging into the facts on this issue?
You know, I think that most, and I worked at the New York Times, so I know. Okay, most journalists are on the left, and they believe that marijuana legalization is a racial justice issue, it's a social justice issue, you know, and they believe essentially that this is only a bunch of right-wingers would be against this. And, you know, there's always been a cultural disconnect about marijuana, and, you know, dating back to the late 60s. But the difference was, back then, the drug was not actually very strong. Yes, you could get high, and yes, I think if you really wanted to smoke a lot, you could get high enough possibly to have, you know, psychosis or negative symptoms. But it is a totally different drug now. And the other thing that's very strange about marijuana is that it's been legalized, you know, being pushed to legalize and been legalized in many states, even though most people don't actually use it. It's not like alcohol, where almost 70% of adults have had a drink in the last year. Only 15% of American adults used cannabis in the last year. And a lot of those people use it once or twice and don't like it. So there are people out there, they don't like it because the paranoia and the psychosis, you know, the quasi-psychotic symptoms it produces are unpleasant for people. So people have been told something about a drug that they don't use, that they maybe remember growing up as, you know, very mild. And they've been told that it's medicine, and they've been told that, you know what, if you have chronic pain, this is good, and it's a substitute for opioids. They've been told a lot of stuff that is really not very supported by the science, and the risks have been downplayed. And, you know, I think Americans are reasonable people, but if you're being told a bunch of myths over and over again for 20 years, it's going to affect the way you look at something.
Two quick final questions for you, Alex. Is there a certain irony in the fact that I can turn on the television and see commercials that Philip Morris International
one of the leading producers of tobacco, is being required by the U.S. courts to run, talking about the dangers of its product with their name attached. And at the same time in the United States, there's a push to legalize marijuana.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think we realize the dangers of one addictive smokes product. We realize that it killed, you know, millions, no exaggeration, millions of Americans, and that the companies that made it lied about its risks. And yet we're very happy to have this other addictive smoke product, which has different risks, okay, but severe risks introduced. I don't understand it. It's like, but again, if you look at opioids in the United States in the last 20 years, if that crisis proves anything, it's that no one ever learned anything from history. We have 100-plus years of evidence of the dangers of opioids. This is a true story. The first person to die of an opioid-injected overdose in history is the wife of the man who invented the hypodermic syringe. Okay? When you introduce opioids to the population, people die. And yet we've had no problem doing that. And I just don't understand why we're not looking at these risks with cannabis.
Finally, how did you come to this question, to ask the questions that you're answering in Tell Your Children?
My wife is a forensic psychiatrist. So forensic psychiatrists are a very specialized kind of psychiatrist. They deal with the criminally mentally ill. So she is one of the people who cleans up the wreckage. The wreckage when someone, you know, beats his wife to death with a bat or drowns his kid. These crimes, these psychosis-related crimes, are terrible. And in fact, the fact that they are so terrible is one reason why we don't talk about them, because they're so unpleasant that, you know, the person gets arrested and, you know, they're not the, like, mystery of the week. It's always quite clear who did it. And so the person gets arrested and basically you never hear about them again. And, you know, they wind up in facilities like the ones that my wife, you know, was a senior doctor at. And so she said to me, look, everybody I see used cannabis, and either used it at the time of the crime or used it as they became mentally ill or both. And I said, Jackie, that's not true. And she said, you should go look at the studies. And, you know, my wife went to Harvard and Columbia. She trained there. And so I discovered she was right.
Alex Berenson is a former New York Times reporter and author of the new book called Tell Your Children, The Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. You can find a link to this book and purchase it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Alex, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we're going to talk about a group that we have not talked about in any depth in all my years, 20 years of doing Issues, Etc. I don't know how we overlooked it, but we did. We're going to correct that. The Jesuits, or the Society of Jesus, its founder, Ignatius Loyola. This is a group that has tremendous influence and power in the Roman Catholic Church. We'll find out where it came from and what it's up to. Dr. Matt Phillips, Associate Professor of History at Concordia University in Nebraska, will be our guest.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.